We're recording.
So anyway, we drafted this letter and submitted it to the chair of the steering committee for the CGS program. Apparently it pissed her off, and she came and complained to our department chair about how terribly misunderstood they were and yada yada yada. Anyway, she decided to finally draft a letter and respond to the graduate students, and of course it was full of empty words, that really all she said was that they would try better next year. So yet we're here yet again undergoing another search for this position, and hopefully Andrea Smith is somewhere happy and doing what she needs to do. She would have been perfect for our program, though.
Yeah, she's a scholar activist. She has a board in school history, trauma, some project. She has a board in school healing project, I think it's called. She has Insight, mm-hmm. Which is really, she's really great at working with domestic violence in communities of color. And, you know, okay, so bringing it back to ethnic studies, my thought was, ethnic studies said they really wanted her and that they fought for it. At the same time, I was thinking, you know, if ethnic studies had centered indigeneity within its vision statement, within the department, if we had said indigeneity is so critical to this project that we can't go on, and then CGS would have known, like, oh, you know, we can't... We have to take this hire very seriously, and we're going to have to really be able to justify letting somebody like Andrea Smith go. Her new book, Unlikely Alliances, is going to be great when it comes out next year. And so I thought, you know, that Ethnic Studies still has a job to do, that they weren't completely blameless in this, in losing Andrea Smith, even though it wasn't ultimately their decision.
I definitely agree that centering indigeneity would be an extremely productive exercise, a productive critical exercise for ethnic studies to do. And they have the beginnings of it, with the inclusion of both indigeneity and then post-coloniality in their vision statement. And so, I mean, we're definitely taking advantage of that in everything that we're doing this year, in that saying that, you know what, well, so you're saying this, right? So then why is it then that Pacific Islanders or Native Americans don't apply to this program and then don't usually get into this program? So you have to prove that, right? So if these things do matter, then you need to put out money or put out some sort of programs to start bringing these people in. Because, I mean, one of my friends applied to our department last year, and she didn't get in at all. I mean, she does pretty good work. She's Native Hawaiian and Filipina, but I don't know. They probably didn't even look at her, really, because the scope that Indigenous people have for their work is usually outside of ethnic studies. And part of it is for really stupid reasons, like Madel, would you like to say something?
No, I just want to say that they probably didn't look at her because there were already enough of us here, right? And I think there's a quota, right? Hey, look, we've allowed an X number of students into the department. Now we need to look broader because this is my thinking. I really feel like the department sees us as this minority group, and that they've filled enough spaces to represent our numbers, right? So I feel like they don't look beyond it, because or look for more Pacific Islanders or Native Americans, because we have three. Goodness gracious, that's more than plenty. Look at other departments.
Well,
they don't even have one.
Wow. In representative population terms, there shouldn't be any of us.
Right. So they think that they're doing pretty good, and so when they see a Pacific Islander, Native American, they're not going to necessarily think twice about that.
Yeah.
That's just my personal thought.
That's why the the centering of that thing is so important, because it goes beyond just simple inclusion, that there's these people out there who deserve to be a part of this, you know, because they exist or whatever, but it doesn't pay attention to the important critical things that happen when they are brought in, like, and when you put them at the center of the discussion. Because if you keep, well, all of our communities are on the fringes of all discussions, right? Like, most people don't even know about Pacific Islanders, the
like
islands
Palau.
That we come, Palau, and more people know about Guam, but people tend to think that Guam is a foreign country, or is the 52nd state after Puerto Rico, or Guatemala, God knows what. Like, and people, of course, so the last thing on their mind is that Guam would be a colony of the United States. But then Native Americans, too, definitely, they're there because the U.S. The U.S. can't ever get rid of them in terms of both history and in terms of the physical bodies, even though people try constantly. And so the relationships between the national subjects, those in the U.S. nation, and then those on the periphery, Native Americans, it's mythology and it's racism. That's what governs, or that's what kind of covers the relationship. So that, you know, so Native Americans, they're still the feather and dances and whatever, feathers and dances and teepees and stuff, or just racist kind of materialistic whatever. They have casinos, they're rich, you know, they make way more money, they have special rights,
they don't pay taxes,
etc. And so if you simply just say that, well, you know, we'll bring in a couple of these students because you guys, well, maybe we'll make you part of the food groups, the ethnic food groups, you know, then those issues never get addressed, right? Because then you're just still on the margins and you put out a little bit of work here and there, but basically it's no discussion of justice and no discussion of anything really important ever takes place, because you're just part of the multicultural matrix. So, one of you guys can talk, I'm sorry.
I'm good.
I was just thinking, I think they espouse or center indigeneity in the department vision statement, but I wonder if any of them actually know what that is, what it looks like, what it means for us and for the department, and how valuable it can be to the... to the look that they're trying to create, you know? Like, they have this new look that they're trying to...
There's a new look?
Which is why there's a new vision statement.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
But sorry, you could say something.
No, I'm interested because, you know, I'm only in the second year. I haven't had... I mean, last year I was just trying to keep my head up. Only thing I was observing is how far from shore I was. That's for the best islanders of the shore, the ocean.
Yeah.
No.
But the new look is interesting because it's transnational and then it's kind of intranational, right? Mm-hmm. So it's, but then with most of the faculty, like, the emphasis is not intranational, it's, and not intra, so within the nation, nations within nations, colonies, etc. But it's transnational. That's where everyone leans. So we bring in these two important focuses, which will make ethnic studies more relevant to more people, more critical, you know, just better in terms of social justice and critique. We bring these two things in there, but everybody leans towards transnational. Like, that's where everyone goes. Like, oh, yeah, cross borders, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And no one, and then really it's just kind of like a lip service to the nations within nations, indigenous communities, those that live very ambiguous existences and whose existences never make it into any transnational critiques or any transnational scholarship. I mean, there's so much stupid transnational scholarship about the Pacific that skips over the Pacific entirely, going between the United States and the Pacific Rim, Japan, China, Hong Kong, South Korea. And it just, but it's called Pacific. It bears the name Pacific, but it never deals with anything in the Pacific.
No, but I mean, it's true. So you get all this transnational discourse around immigrant lives and migration. And yet, you know, even in this course that I'm TAing for on Introduction to Asian American Studies. I don't know why they felt like I would be a good person to fill that
Asian
spot.
Oh, right.
I forgot. But I mean, even in this course, we look at Asian American lives on this West Coast, right, primarily, but never do we look at them in relation to the Native communities that live here. So we're talking about Asian Americans, Asian lives, and every now and then you'll hear them incorporate the story of slavery, but we don't really talk about what happened to the slaves when we're talking about, well, the quote-unquote coolies were treated just as severely as slaves. And I'm like, we need to be careful about how we're making these comparisons, because I think anybody would laugh if you walked out of this classroom and made that claim, right?
Oh, laughing would be kind. Or you get stuck on the...
Who got more oppressed?
Well, yeah, and then, like, cry me a river because I didn't get to be part of the nation, and I don't get to be, you know, a citizen and middle class and, right, you know, quote-unquote white or whatever. And it's like, oh, geez. You know, it gets, these immigrant discourses are so problematic, and they, centering indigeneity is a way to critique that. But also, like, what's interesting to me is that when you dive into indigenous epistemologies, like, you do not know what really the production will be. I mean, and that is exciting because so much of academia is formulaic with you do this, 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 and then you're the expert, and then you get to, you know, and don't collaborate, and don't do any of the things that we've taught are, like, the way that to be good in the world, you know? And then, so... Whew, you know, luckily there are people, you know, who have been writing about this. I mean, we're certainly not the first people to sit down and have this conversation, but you wouldn't necessarily know that from the reaction of some people in the department when you bring up indigeneity? Yeah.
All right. Oh, not even in just our department, but I mean, all over. Like, go to the cutting edge academic conferences, and unless that conference is geared specifically to this topic, then, you know, indigenous anything is kind of in the corner. Like the American Studies Association conference or the Association of Asian American Studies conference, like, these are the two big ones. And then, all since interdisciplinarity is the kind of the mark of the most cutting edge research nowadays, like, all the biggest names go to these conferences. But then if you look, and then at the same time, all these conferences, all these associations are constantly making gestures to bring in Pacific Island studies, Native American studies. You know, like the panel in 2003 with Phil DeLoria, Jean O'Brien, and Robert Warrior. You know, could the ASA be a home for American Indian studies? But then, like, so there's all these gestures, and great things can come from them, but little ever does. I mean, Pacific Islander panels tend to be... And Native American panels tend to be in really crappy places, scheduled against each other a lot of times. Like, this is the Pacific Island hour, or this is the American Indian hour. So you put the three of them at the exact same time, so people can't attend all of them. Like, when me and Madel were at one conference, we got scheduled for, like, the last slot on the last day. And there was only two Pacific Islander panels out of like, more than 100.
Oh, Jesus.
And so, I mean, and the only people who showed up happened to be people from the department, our department, in our cohort. Thank goodness for them, right? So
no, there was a tall Samoan guy.
Oh, that's right.
So, nice.
I mean, he was nice, and he was, you know, inquiring and trying to put his foot in the door in terms of seeking out a higher education. And trying to figure out what he would do, because he wanted to, I mean, you could totally tell he wanted to center that in any potential project that he undertook. But it's always hard because students coming up into higher education or graduate school, they tend to not even know, you know, how to articulate indigenous epistemology, let alone center it in their work, right? And then there's very few faculty to help guide that and bring that out. And so I think that I was very fortunate to be able to come to this department and have me get there, you know? And then have, at the time, I believe there was a strong push for Pacific Islanders to come in. I don't know why they were doing that. I mean, I don't know the real reason why, but I strongly believe that it's because it was part of this new look transformation that's been going on.
No, that's going to be over the past couple of years, you know, departments like Ethnic Studies, American Studies, they're all, the limited number of graduate departments, they're all kind of trying to diversify and then capture these new domains of knowledge. So UCSD is cutting edge in terms of, what's it called, in terms of kind of distancing itself from like 1960s ethnic studies, which is like negritude or, you know, what are those things called? Like Asian American studies, Chicano studies,
Native groups.
Yeah, or the kind of identity politics that you go into this department to learn your history,
right,
and to, you know, to get your good identity.
Right.
So our department is cutting edge in that sense that the people who want to do those things kind of suffer in our department. So, like, that's good. But then, in other senses, like, that's bad, because then that's bad, especially in terms of those who want to do indigenous stuff, because then people like us, we get labeled as essentialist constantly. But then we come from a different theoretical, we're trying to articulate a different theoretical framework, because, and so there's something to kind of having a dialogue with that, but that most people in ethnic studies, American studies, like the big scholars or whatever, like they just like reject that, like no, that's essentialist. People have already tried talking like that. Like, you can't talk like that. Like, people have already tried these nationalist cultural movements, like whatever, like you guys can't do that. Like, read your history about what Chicano nationalists did or Asian Americans in the 70s and so on, and then you'll see that talking like that doesn't work.
But you want to know what's really interesting to me is that, you know, upon coming to this program, I thought, okay, good, they're open to different ways of knowing. I mean, and this is what they espouse from day one. We're open to different ways of knowing, to different ways of producing that knowledge, right? And yet, the methodological approach to producing that knowledge remains the same, right? So even though they say they're open to it, maybe I don't want to use Foucault and whoever else in my thesis work. What if I just want to rely on my grandmother and all the other people who I acquired my knowledge about the world from, right? As my source and my substantial evidence, right? To make my claims. Then they say, no, you can't do that.
Did you hear that?
Did I hear that? It was slammed into me. I had no choice. That was the hardest thing about getting through the first two years, was accepting the reality that no matter how much they say we're open to producing new knowledge, we're open to different ways of knowing, it still brought me back to the point where I had to use Western epistemological methods and ideas. And so, you know, Miguel used to tell me all the time, I'm not going to do that because I want to write from the Pacific. And I didn't understand that before, but now that I'm doing my prospectus for my dissertation, I'm like, I'm going to write from Palau.
That's going to be awesome.
That's it. I'm not even negotiating that anymore. I don't know how that's going to be, what it's going to look like, but I'm going to do it.
But that's the cool part. Like, exactly. We don't know what that's going to look like because mm-hmm. we're not following a formula that has been done and done and done. Mm-hmm. And it is uncomfortable. You know, I went to Ross this last week and said, okay, here's my new project. And later that day, when I was talking to my cohort, we were calling it my fake project because Ross is like, okay, I understand. Ross is great. Y'all know that, like, he has supported me in many ways. Mm-hmm. And in this way, he did, too. He said, I understand that you need to work this through before you can do your real project. Which, the real project to the historian was the Dusty Archives, the interviews, right. And so we were laughing later because I was like, yeah, I'm working on my fake project over here. You know, but then I was realizing at home later, like, that it's just, you take people, I mean, I am always trying to convince myself that I have a right to be here still. Like, I still hear the voices that say, not smart enough, don't belong here, I should, it's not just that I'm not smart enough, but it's just, it's not an easy fit. It's not comfortable, and even though they say everybody feels that way, I know that my cohort struggles differently than I do. And when I talk to a good friend of mine at University of Michigan, and she's the only Indigenous person in her cohort, and she affirms it, you know, we know this isn't our place. And then also, like, this whole production of knowledge, becoming an expert, like, that, I mean, you know, you have to resist in certain ways at the same time that you're sort of surrendering to this process. And way to be schizophrenic. I mean, way to really, like, it's a complicated way to work. And then, of course, there's the whole just the, I mean, I don't know if our department is as hard as, I mean, I know it's hard, like, academically, but is as hard on us as other departments where, in the breaking down of the ego in order to build up the scholar, whatever, you know, the traditional graduate school, like, mindfuck.
Yeah, our department is definitely, well, I mean, our department is nicer, and there is a lot of room compared to if you went into, like, a straight history department or a sociology department or anthropology department or a political science department. Like, if you went into any of those, like, unless it was a department that was, you know, trying to specifically, like, work on Indigenous stuff or, like an Indigenous politics something, emphasis or something, then yeah, it would be like horrifying. Because it would be the same thing, but it would probably be around a bunch of Haole people. Like, they would react to the introduction of this knowledge or these experiences like the same way. Like, you're saying that there's something different about your existence or where you come from, but I don't know, you seem just like any other not white person. You know, oppression, exploitation, want inclusion, want rights, etc. You know, you say that, you know, you have these forms of knowing, this different methodology and stuff, but it just looks non-objective. It just looks subjective. It just doesn't look like anything which would produce scholarship. And so, on the spectrum of things, our department will allow kind of us more leeway, I think, but still, there's limits. And then one of the big limits is just because, like, unfortunately, like, a lot of people of color in this country think that they're the bottom, you know, think that they're the bottom rung and that there is nothing beneath them. There is just this bottom rung which all people of color sit at. And so they don't reconcile that even ethnic studies is built upon the erasure of large numbers of people and their relationship to the nation. So, like, I mean, I was reading a piece by Phil DeLoria, and he was articulating that, you know, people always forget that Native Americans in the United States have a fundamentally different relationship to the rest of the United States than just about everybody else. And that you're constantly dealing with the federal government in really messed up ways and constantly fighting over your own body and so on. And so different other groups also have those things, but then, I don't know. There's just this incredible erasure even within the critical studies of those things. So even though ethnic studies is like one of the most radical ways of knowledge producing in the academy, like, they still can't reckon with that. And I wish that they would, because it would be so productive. So productive if they would.
I'm here because I think that conversations like this, I hope, will force the hand to the centering of indigeneity within ethnic studies. I think it's so important for ethnic studies to, when I wrote this manifesto, this paper about it, when I was taking this one class that they deemed so important, they call it a core class, the Controversies in Ethnic Studies.
Scandals in Ethnic Studies.
And because I was doing this great directed reading with you and Midal at the same time, and I was able to discuss it with my cohort, my cohort was saying, gosh, what you're talking about with the nation and reading these interesting books about different epistemologies and so forth, that sounds really interesting, and we need that. And now that Indigenous Epistemologies is in the vision statement, I mean, my dream would be to have 200C be a version of the directed reading that you put together because you wanted it, but I think it's really necessary to ethnic studies. Like, so it's in the vision statement, but like we said, a lot of the people don't even know what Indigenous epistemologies are. I know.